Hello and welcome to episode 18 of Chicago Business Podcast, where we introduce leading executives in the area and learn about how innovation is changing their businesses. I am your host, Drew Sekula, and today we welcome Amy Morton, longtime restaurateur and owner and operator of AMDP Management, where she runs multiple premium dining establishments in Chicagoland. Hello, Amy. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Drew. Glad to be here. How you feeling?
Yeah, I'm doing real well. Nice to have you on. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
So get started with the icebreaker beverage of the day. So in talking with your team over there, I learned a little bit about the Babbling Brook. So what can you tell us about the Babbling Brook?
Well, let me tell you, it doesn't matter how many you drink, it just makes you chat more. So the Babbling Brook, AKA the Babbler, was the, since even before I opened Found Kitchen, and I'm in the restaurant business, three in Evanston, one in Aurora, we'll get to that later. And the Babbling Brook has been our classic cocktail, our signature cocktail since we opened. Not sure if you're aware that Evanston is the birthplace of Prohibition. And there are quite a few, from street names to businesses these days, that reflect that. And there's a really cool business called Few Spirits, F-E-W, Frances E. Willard. She was the woman that was behind Prohibition, and she was from Evanston. Anyway, funny joke, right? They opened this really cool distillery right down the block from us. And one of the guys that opened it, he was the marketing guy, his name was Brooke. And they had made this incredible gin on the same street, four blocks down from my first place, Found Kitchen. And we were just chatting one day, and I went over to the distillery, and he came over to the space before we opened it. And we brewed up this incredible cocktail. I named it for him, the Babbling Brook, because his name was Brooke, and it makes you babble. And it was, the original cocktail was Few Spirits Gin. I don't remember which one it was. Saint Germain, which is just a marvelous French liqueur, elderberry in flavor, and lime. And it's three parts gin, elderberry, and lime. Super easy to make, and you can have it straight up or on the rocks.
Nice. Yes. Well, I decided to have my try at it. So
please,
I put one together here.
Now, how is it?
You know what? I haven't tried it though. It was I have my ice cubes ready to drop in, so I'm gonna do that now.
Okay. Yeah, you don't want to get it watered down.
Yeah, exactly. So just a couple. But I'll give it a taste.
I want to see.
Yeah, that's great.
So if the proportions are, go ahead.
Right, yeah, third, a third, a third. That's not, that's more than a little bit of lime juice. That's not just a squeeze.
Well, if you want to balance, and I feel the drink, you know, any good cocktail is balanced, right? You need a balanced cocktail. And I'm a spirit forward drinker myself, but I'm sorry that today I'm drinking green because I'm on a detox. I'm cleansing. I'm going away this week. So I wanted to look fit and feel fabulous. But the Saint Germain can be so cloyingly sweet. The lime really should balance it. So it shouldn't be really forward lime. It should just be a really good mélange of all the flavors.
Yes. You know, it wasn't overbearing by any means. It was more a little bit of intimidation when I was squeezing the fresh squeezed lime that, you know, I had to get to break into a second lime to get enough lime juice to get that full third proportion. So
how much gin did you put in?
I did an ounce and a half of each.
Perfect.
Yeah. where you should be, right?
Respectable.
So, yeah, there you go. There you go. So we've gotten a little ways into here. We haven't even covered yet a whole lot about your business. So Amy Morton, some people will certainly know the name. Everybody will recognize the last name. And so if you could, please bring people, our listeners, up to speed on your connection to the Morton Steakhouse. And the Morton name is obviously well known in restaurant circles and well beyond. So, but why don't you tell us who you are?
Absolutely. Well, I am Amy Morton. You introduced me as the founder and operator of AMDP Management. So AMDP is a nod to my dear old dad. And the name of the management company is Arnie Morton's Daughter's Place. So my father was Arnold Morton, and my dad, an amazing, amazing career in the food and beverage industry. And we can get into his details, though his management company, after he left Playboy, and he was the vice president of Playboy International and opened all the clubs and hotels around the world for Hef. When he finally left Playboy, when he said he got tired of raising his hand to go to the bathroom, and he took a year off and he opened what became his flagship restaurant, which was his name. It was called Arnie's at 1030 North State Street. He opened that in 72, 73, and then 78 is when the Mortons opened, the first Mortons. But his management company was Peter Morton's father's place. So I'm Amy Morton's daughter's place, and my dad's management company was Peter Morton's father's place. And my dad was so incredibly proud of my brother, who at about 22 years old founded the Hard Rock Cafe in London. And so, you know, I consider myself fourth generation. My dad was in the business. I've got seven siblings. Five of them are in the business. And my grandfather, Morton C. Morton, who my dad learned from, had a restaurant called Morton's on the South Side. And then my great-grandfather was known as the neighborhood pharmacist, but we know what he was selling out of the back room. So so we go way back with food and beverage. In fact, my dad was in the Second World War. My dad was born in 22. And he enlisted like all the guys did. He arrived in the beaches of Normandy 2 days before D-Day. His job was cleaning the beaches. And all the guys got trench foot in his infantry, because what they do is they'd have to cut the bottoms out of their sleeping bags. In case they were attacked at night, they would pick up the bags and they would run. And they all got, many of them lost feet, toes, legs. Thank God my dad didn't. But when my dad got out of the hospital, because they knew he was in the food and beverage business already, they sent him to REMS, which is, of course, where we find champagne. And he ran an officer's club there for his last 8 months. So it's in our blood. It's in our blood.
I'd say so. Wow. That's that's a lot of history in the in food and beverage. No doubt, no doubt. And then what about the ties back to Chicago? Is all of that kind of tied back into, how far back do your roots go in Chicago?
Oh, well, my grandfather's, well, we believe the pharmacist may have been up in Iron Mountain, Michigan, though my grandfather, Morton C. Morton, was... operating his first place, Cotton, if I walk you upstairs, I can show you a really cool old menu. Operated from the 30s, right after Prohibition. He opened his first place on South Shore Drive. And he had three different locations of that Morton's restaurant. The first one had literally the sawdust floors and a few items that everybody said were my grandmother's, but we hear that actually my grandmother didn't cook. So, and he sat in the corner and he played gin. And as people would walk in, he'd kind of let them know where they could sit. And so the Morton's restaurants have been, not my father's. Can you hear me well enough? I hear some action upstairs.
Yep.
My grandfather's restaurants in Hyde Park, which they were later in Hyde Park, are still places that some of my guests come in and share stories with about that those days with me. So my dad grew up working for my grandfather. That was also in Chicago. And when my dad got back from the war, he did a restaurant or two with one of his brothers. And then he had this little idea of opening a key club. Nobody had ever done a key club, a private club with a membership key. The memberships were $1. Though thought it would be cool and exclusive. And he actually opened that. So my dad was a South Side guy. They were South Side through and through. Though the Walton Walk, which was his key club, was opened on the North Side. And it's actually, do you know where Le Passage is? It's right across where, it's basically Oak and Rush Street, right? Okay. So right downtown. And in the alley, he opened this little restaurant, this little joint, this key club called the Walton Walk. And there was a guy who loved the Walton Walk, and his name was Victor Lowndes. And Vic was a University of Chicago student. He also happened to be Hugh Hefner's best friend. And Hef had put out the first magazine in 1955, and of course it was all the rage. So Vic says, Hef, you gotta come to this place. You just gotta check it out. They had already been talking about how they could grow the concept beyond a magazine. And they walked in and they said, this is it, and this is the guy. So they asked my dad to join them. He was the third partner. Victor Lowndes became my uncle Victor, of course, and Victor went on to run the European branch and all the gaming. Unfortunately, in the 80s, they lost all that, and it's really one of, many say it was one of the great downfalls of Playboy. But they had a great run from 1960 through about 72 when my dad left, but they'd already gone public, and my dad's a guy who just wants to do it all. And that's kind of that was, of course, the Chicago connection too, because they're all in Chicago. And then my dad went on to open his little empire, which the Morton Steakhouses were the one that he did multiple locations of. And first two were in Chicago, and then they branched out. Other Chicago, my brother Michael Morton was here in Chicago and worked before he went to Las Vegas. My brother David Morton still is here, has a dozen restaurants. My brother Peter and Pam are in LA, and that's where they had their restaurants. But it all kind of grew out of Chicago.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Chicago's so where
much,
it happens.
So much fun. Yeah, especially on the dining scene. Let's talk about your restaurants. Mm-hmm. What do you have going on right now?
Well, that's either a loaded question or a trick question or both, obviously in the middle of a pandemic. But a year ago, before the pandemic, I was opening my fourth restaurant. I was in the business my whole life. I worked with my father. One of my earliest memories was walking through Arnie's at 10 years old and sweeping out the space during construction on a Saturday, and that gritty sound under my dad's shoes. I loved it so much. I went on to work with him for many years. Swore I was never going to go into the business because I was going to be an actor. And I had a first career. I had a first career early on that was in the city. And after that, I decided I never wanted to eat in another restaurant, let alone own one. And I took a different path until one day I have three daughters and they started getting a little bit older. And I thought, you know what? I do want to try this again. So 12 years ago, I really started thinking about the business. I'd taken about 15 off, 10 off. And then 8 years ago, I opened Found Kitchen and Social House. That's here in Evanston where I live. It's a farm to table shared plate concept that is vibe of, oh, I have a daughter calling me. I'm on a podcast, darling. I'm doing a podcast. And, oh, yay, thank you. Oh, can't open it yet. I love you. Happy almost birthday. My youngest is turning 17. So the vibe of Found was Gertrude Stein Salon of 1920s Paris meets Jack Kerouac in 1950 San Francisco. It was Found. The idea of it was Found is everything was found. The items were found. The procurement of our food and product was really important. It was 100% local. And to this day, about 90% of our products are driven in by the farmers themselves within about an hour and a half. And so that was Found, my little baby. And then I did the Barn Steakhouse, which is an homage to my fabulous father. And then I did a little healthy burger joint and salad sort of smoothie bar at Northwestern. So we do a Juicy Lucy there. It's a fully stuffed burger with cheese and it's delicious. And then I opened last winter up in Aurora, probably the most challenging and the most fun of any of my projects. It's next to the Paramount Theater, highest subscribed to theater in the state, second most highly subscribed to theater in the United States. Gorgeous old 1800 seat 1920s movies house that was turned into a legit live theater where they do all musical theater. And the guy that does it, Tim Rader, is a genius. Anyway, Aurora is, it's been very depressed. And for many, many years, it was the second largest, it is still the second largest city in the state of Illinois. Though starting from the 40s on, it started on a downward spiral and it never really got out of it. And there is a massive revitalization project out there now. And the renaissance that's going out there on this stunning city on the Fox River is amazing and became my second home. So last March, had about 120 employees. Today I have 4. So we got hit with COVID, right? So what's going on in my world is I see it as two sides of a coin. The absolute devastation and desecration of certainly of my industry, food and beverage. I think by anybody's account that is at all knowledgeable, we will certainly see a loss of at least 60% of restaurants by the spring nationwide. And that goes from, you know, the big corporate to the little mom and pop. The number of Hispanic people who work in our industry who we could not operate without, I think is the most tragic, especially with the, you know, the administration that we've had in the White House and such deep rooted fears of being, you know, sent away from their families, that people, even when they have been legal, which of course that's who we hire, have been afraid to apply for unemployment. So it's been really, really devastating. And just with so many people out of work, there's that. And then there's the other side, which is me and my insanity. But I feel thrilled each day when I wake up, because every single day I get to create a new concept. I mean, I think for an owner operator, someone who truly is the conceptual one, the most fun part about the business is creating the concepts. And that's what we're doing just to get by. You know, what's a new revenue stream? How can I bring a few more people on? Since March, so one of the fundamental components of my whole company, but certainly Found Kitchen, is that we hire people coming out of homelessness. My goal was for the restaurant to be a stepping stone for people living more independent lives. That's another story, but it's been very, very challenging. Though I have worked in the area of homelessness, including in the Chicago Planning Department for Liz Hollander, in and researching the area of homelessness. So I'm very connected with it still. We were able to cook, starting from March, breakfast. I used to cook breakfast every day for our shelter here in town with my daughter. We cooked for 20 people. In March, they called and asked if I could take it on a daily basis. And by April, May, we were cooking 190 breakfasts every single morning. And we did that until September for all the homeless that they put in various hotels around to protect them. And it was an incredible experience. So, you know, but doing that, it felt good. But I also got to bring some of my team back to work. We started a juice bar at Found. I mean, I've wanted juice. I've wanted to do a juice bar my entire life. It's kind of like, I don't know. You know, it's a lot of work for not a little, you know, for very little revenue. So amidst the, just the heightened awareness, certainly here in Evanston, and specifically for my daughter, Abra, my middle daughter, who is completely on mission with Black Lives Matter. We opened Three Sisters Juice, and 100% of the net went to Black Lives Matter. So that was another way to bring people back to work, but again, a way that we felt like we could really make a difference. I'm taking my poor little puppy's bone away because it's probably very annoying. Can you hear it? I heard something.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, buddy. So, you know, the last close to year has been a hybrid of finding new revenue streams, getting my team to work, and making a difference. And I believe those of us that survive are going to see, we're going to see a roaring 20s that looks like child's play compared to the last century. I think it'll truly be the spring of 22 by the time we really get back to get, you know, in action. Though the whole name of the game for me is taking the long view, being smart, how we can protect the capital that we have, maintain our brands, and even grow it while doing good, so that when we come out of this, we can run. So that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's great. It's great to hear a positive perspective as well, because there's obviously with so much so many headwinds there. It's mm-hmm. you know, you got your work cut out for you, but to maintain such a positive attitude and view, I think that it's certainly commendable. And the work that you're doing, especially around homelessness, is just is unbelievable in terms of you know, what you're you know, what you've been able to put out there. And I mean, from a capital perspective, though, it must be a challenge, right, to figure out how much
brutal.
You know, what are you doing now versus, you know, what do you have to hold back?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's acting and reacting as fast as humanly possible. There's no opportunity to second guess ourselves. The minute I believe any business, but particularly mine, I have a second thought, I know I need to act on it. I closed Aurora before the mandate came. Once the theater shut, I knew we were going to have nothing. It's not even going to open until next summer when Broadway does. So that is just mothballed, as we call it. Conserve as much cash as possible. Our landlords have been incredible with us, and we will return when we have the client base. And when we did close by the mandate last March, what I did was I sold all my inventory to the Barn Steakhouse, which is my smallest, simplest, cleanest concept to run. And I said, do not buy one thing. I do not care if it's on the menu. Here is the product. Invent. And in fact, I mean, we started curbside so fast. I mean, we couldn't pay people to order to go a year ago. And we we also just wanted to get rid of the product because when it first happened, we didn't know that we would be closed any more than a couple of weeks. I just didn't want my product to go bad. So it was basically a flash sale. I didn't care about making anything on it. I just wanted to recoup the cash that we'd already spent on it. And that went for any product. And I believe that we broadened our market at the Barnes Steakhouse 50-fold compared to the 4 years we were open previously. And I think that so much of the image that I hoped to create for the Barnes Steakhouse just happened naturally, where it always felt that, oh, it was a little too, it was a steakhouse, it was super expensive. And once the world, you know, fell apart, people took a second look. And so knock on wood, I think that wound up being a great opportunity for the Barnes Steakhouse. Found, on the other hand, I closed, did not reopen until we got our feet wet. I had just brought in a new chef, a woman who actually, in my first career, when I had a place down in Old Town in the early 90s, a woman named Debbie Gold was my chef, my second chef, and it was her first chef job. I sold the place, we parted ways. She went on to be a James Beard winner. And she finally came back to Chicago, and we'd been wanting to work together for so long that she came over and took over as the executive chef position for the company 3 weeks before the quarantine. So nobody ever really heard about Debbie, and so we just kind of brainstormed. And it's, I am not a person that can just do something. I can't just go out and buy a Christmas gift. I can't just go out and buy a birthday gift. And I'm not just going to choose something to sell for the sake of it. I am a person that everything needs to have a reason and a meaning behind it. And I need to sit and let it unfold. And one day Debbie and I were talking, and as she was getting comfortable with what the mission really was of Found, because it had been closed now for a few months, I'd always wanted to do a pantry. I'd always wanted there to be sort of like this little shop. You can grab stuff that you're going to run out of in the middle of the night. But then Debbie said to me, well, let's talk to the farmers. Like, what do they need to sell? I was like, oh my God, that's exactly right. And so that was another win-win, is here we got to create something new. And we also got to support our community that has been there for us always, you know, and that went really, really great until, of course, farmers markets opened up and we just kicked it off again. So now with the second shutdown, from the minute it happened, I knew it was going to be at least through New Year's. Now I don't think we'll really see people coming back to restaurants until it warms up, and I hope that'll be March. The Barnes Steakhouse, we put out tents. We've got a gorgeous tented area. We can seat as many people outside as we could inside. Found, city rejected our tenting, which was very frustrating. And I'm picking a bone with the city of Evanston right now, but I don't want to get myself into trouble. So we have just furloughed everybody at Found. We've moved our couple players over to the Barnes Steakhouse, Debbie, our executive chef, and our Sue. And we've tightened it all up, and we're basically going to go back to running like we were last year. But we don't have our training wheels on anymore. Our training wheels are off because we're kind of getting used to it. So last Mother's Day and Easter, when we did, you know, 375 covers and we're pulling our hair out and we were always a step behind. Our Thanksgiving meal that we did to go from Found was so seamless, with the most happy, appreciative, delighted guests, that we're really, really excited to do Christmas and New Year's. And we're just looking at it in a new way. I mean, you know, New Year's, we've got three different packages. We know how to do them. And although Found will be closed per se, the brand-wise will be open. We still will do the big holidays. We'll do our Valentine's Aphrodisiac Week, or, you know, whatever it is that we choose to do. And I think people are really enjoying having a James Beard chef. cook their anniversary dinner for them. So we're doing anniversary dinners with champagne glasses and wine and spirits. And we've got a bottle shop going where you can buy a 6-pack of wine for 25% off list price. I mean, I'm feeling like a car salesman right now, but basically it's what we're doing and it's quite enlivening. We just gotta make sure we stay grounded doing it.
Right, that's the whole thing. I mean, all the ideas are great, and that's I'm sure it keeps customers interested and trying to see what you guys are up to, but still trying to figure out. It's one thing to have a concept, another thing to figure out a way to actually make it work, right? And
well,
like and sometimes you need to make that shift, as you obviously made a lot of difficult decisions through this time.
Yes. So, I mean, since this happened, I mean, the idea of breaking even when we came out of quarantine in June and July, everything in my world changed. When I actually thought coming into July, which was very beautiful summer and month, that could we break even this month? I mean, that became the, you know, what are your annual sales or what did you bank? I mean, the idea of getting close to breaking even, and nobody will be there, not in Chicago this winter. Our PPP was great, but it was expected that we would need that for 3 months. And we didn't even start using ours. I also took the long view on that and said, I'd rather pay the interest later than start using it now, which is, I know a lot of people wound up just burning through their payroll when we couldn't even operate. So we did hang on to ours, which is, you know, what for one of the places we're living on. Fortunately, we banked in one and we were very, very lucky. The other really scary part of this is, you know, it's like the emperor's new clothes. When the tide goes out, you see how lean, you know, the world, different operations, operators were operating and just depending on that next day's income. So I learned my lesson many years ago. So to me, I can't sleep unless I've got my little nut, you know, in the bank. But I'd say even, for example, with closing found for the 3 months that we're going to close it, I do have a very difficult landlord situation. My landlord from day one chose not to give me a break. They didn't give me, in fact, when I called them the other day to see if they could make any concessions, the very next day he sent me a letter with my rent increase. So there are some, the world, people have been so generous. Three of my landlords have been amazing, but my one, unfortunately, is not. And so, you know, we lose less money being closed. And so that's the scoop. And it's just a matter of conserving so we can reopen. But right now, it's not about making money. Right now, it's about staying alive. And in that crazy way, it is equally as thrilling. The challenge of just staying alive right now was, before this, how fast can I pay everybody back? You know, it's... And for me, I'm such a perfectionist and I'm so hard on myself that if we had a month with bad food costs or anything that I could possibly control, I just, you know, I would be beside myself and wouldn't be able to sleep with all the things, what I could have done differently or what I need to do differently. But that's been one of these huge shifts, is we're all in the same boat right now. And that there is a very, for me at least, it's certainly not a sense of relief, but there is an overall calm in that we can only do what we can do, you know? And that has taken, I should say, it's really taken the pressure off and made it possible, at least for me, really to find joy in the creation that, you know, tap dancing through COVID.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to try, right? You got to, all you can do is put your best foot forward because, 100%. You know, you got, everybody's been dealt the cards they have. So that's really, that's great that you're keeping your chin up through the whole thing and doing everything you can. And I understand, yeah, breaking even is the new killing it in that business for, and will be for the, you know, for some period of time. But that, I mean, you had mentioned the 60%, I think, that of restaurants not making it through. I think that, you know, those are just eye-popping, jaw-dropping numbers. But it will, well, I tend to agree with you, though, once we do get through it, people get vaccinated, that I mean, people, there's going to be a lot of pent-up demand. So, you know, hopefully we can have the 20s without the 30s after, you know, once this is done. And
that's one of the lessons the universe is giving us. I believe I have felt since the pandemic started that this really was so much greater than us. And this is my woo-woo side, that the universe was trying to teach us a lesson, that we were sick as a culture. We couldn't go any faster. We needed to slow down. We needed to appreciate perhaps the smaller things. And it's not going to fully go away till we start getting some of these lessons. And I will say the kindness of our guests, and we are exceptionally fortunate to have so many regulars and people who we've never met before. I mean, our guests are great anyway, but the gratitude, the thoughtfulness, the appreciation, anyone who has either come into the restaurant, whether it was the summer, whether it's ordering out, whether it's just getting a pound of cheese, people have been grateful. And those little things seem to make, those really make all the difference.
Right. Did you have much luck with delivery services and things like takeout? And I mean, it's harder with the more fine dining establishments. I would think that's, you know, it's obviously a bigger ask than for a fast casual place.
So. We did exceptionally well when we started out, end of March. We started out right away. We also were probably, our menu was probably available for at least 30% of what it is on the menu. And we kept it that way until we opened. And then it was a little weird when people could see like, oh, but why do you charge this amount when we can get it for that? So now that we're really back to only, you know, we had 13 guests actually in the restaurant last night, which was a lot, or sitting outside, people who just want to get out. And of course we socially distance. But once we get through the holidays, we will be doing the exact same thing with our menu starting in January, just in wanting to move food. So it is less expensive. It's not the giant high ticket price, though people can get the best quality. And I think people are really looking for that. And I think the reason that our curbside, and we are now doing delivery, has been as good as it is because people are choosing to order from and or support the restaurants in their neighborhoods that they know, and as it should be. And I feel so grateful for that. And I feel grateful for being in Evanston with the entire city shut down, that we've now got all of these, you know, dwellers here in Evanston that were typically going to the city every day who are now in their homes that are looking for something a little bit different. So we it's been a little bit of a flip-flop, I think, between where we are in the city, where for, you know, oh, how many times have I said, oh, if only I was in the city, you know, but I'm hoping that we will really ramp up the curbside and the delivery. And, you know, it can never scratch the surface of what we need to do and what we could do if our guests could come to us.
Right. Yeah, it's just not the same experience. And I mean, it's good to be able to try to, you know, to bridge from here to there, but.
Yep, it's just, it's staying relevant. Of, mm-hmm. It's staying relevant.
So from your perspective in terms of stimulus and what needs to be happen there, I mean, obviously the PPP, again, that money came a long time ago, mm-hmm. and the restaurants are hurting. I mean, what's your perspective on what needs to be done there? Is it just?
Well, first let me say that I am a bleeding heart liberal. And haven't been thrilled historically with looking at lobbyists. Though I never experienced firsthand what it meant to have an organization stand by me as my representative. And the National Restaurant Association and the Illinois Restaurant Association have been incredible. They have been so incredible, and they are absolutely, I'm on their junior board, but they will not stop. They will not rest. I do think we are going to see some additional relief whenever this next package, you know, without getting too political here, gets passed. We desperately need it. And I would say that 60% of operations that we're going to lose, that number only stands if and when we do get another relief package. If we don't get another one, it's going to be way, way higher. I mean, it's a year minimum from when this all started, probably a year and a half to 2 years before, and it'll be at least 2 years from the onset that we'll really get back to a normal, whatever a new normal is. And, you know, we are fighting on the state level, national level. Different counties are handling things differently, and it's been pretty astounding to see, for example, what Kane and McHenry County have done, which is where my Claystope Island Social is, the number of grants they have been able to get for different types of businesses and operators is incredible. We have not seen that here in Evanston, but Evanston is a part of Cook County, so we kind of, we're a little bit the redheaded stepchild compared to the city, which obviously is front and center of Chicago. So we have to get another relief package. And we're working really hard on it. And I just hope it gets here sooner than later.
Yeah, certainly can't come fast enough. So, but hopefully we got at least starting to work on it again. So can't get here fast enough. What other opportunities for, when you talk about innovation then within the restaurant business, it's really all about how or the restaurants are shifting coming out of the pandemic, right? There's other, really getting through and then coming out of the pandemic. What other trends though, you know, there's some things like frequent diner rewards and some technology things that are happening. Is that where are you guys at from a frequent dining perspective? Do you have any kind of rewards program or
no? I mean, we're not.
You've considered and decided not to do.
I mean, I don't think we're big enough to do a rewards program. The big boys, the lettuces, where you've got dozens of restaurants to choose from. We do something, it's our third year doing it, Give a Gift, Get a Gift, where we do gift certificates, $100 worth of gift certificates for $20 for yourself. And there's a, you know, limited period mm-hmm. that you can use them. It used to be March. Now it's going to be the end of August. Though in terms of what's to come and opportunities, other opportunities right now, and I think most municipalities have done the best they could to loosen guidelines from doing cocktails to go, et cetera. Though I think that the opportunity lies in being as good, if not better, than we ever were before. And for me, I mean, I am expanding the Barn Steakhouse concept, and unfortunately for some, and fortunately for others, there's going to be a lot of great deals to be had come the end of the first quarter and into the second quarter. So I do think, you know, those that are ready to go and to jump on the opportunities, there's going to be so many of them. So I'm looking at it more from just controlling my costs, keeping it tight right now, and bringing back who we are into whatever the new world is that we step into once it gets warmer. And for me, I already knew I was going to do multiple locations, so I'm starting to dabble with seeing what's out there.
What about your burger concept? So you have that at Northwestern University. How's that doing?
Yeah, so that's called Patty Squared. I do it actually it's with Compass International. I'm on campus at Norris Center. They've been amazing to work with. I don't know if that's what I'm going to do. I'm exploring a lot of stuff. Playing around with opportunities at the United Center as I've kind of expanded my repertoire of what I can and cannot do. But the Northwestern gig was something I've never done before. I think that's what I look for in my opportunities, ways to challenge myself. I am a incredibly hands-on operator, and that is not what they wanted. They wanted me to create the concept and let them run it. And they had to come to me one day and say, Amy, we need you to let them do it. So that in itself was such a crazy way to work, and I've actually really enjoyed it. So now I get to go and visit. But it's based on the iconic burger of Minneapolis, which is called a Juicy Lucy. It's a burger stuffed with cheese. And labor-wise, it was brutal. So we actually made that our special and just a regular burger. The one that certainly the students could use for their dine-in dollars instead of cafeterias. But that's been a great, great opportunity. And I do hope to do more with them. It's a fascinating company. I'm the mom of three daughters, all of which I have silently begged and implored not to go into my business because it's so difficult to maintain a family. And when I started working with Compass, which is, you know, an aspect of Chartwell, sixth biggest employer in the world, and I mean, my eyes were just opened and I was so blown away about all the things one can do with food without having to unlock the door and lock the door every night. So my youngest, I'm trying to push into the realm of food science. I think that's something that was really fascinating for me working with Compass and working on the Northwestern project. And seeing that big is not always bad.
Yeah, well, and certainly these days, I mean, trying to stay alive in the restaurant business, I mean, your only hope is to be well capitalized, right? So, I mean, yes. There's a difference between that and being a large company, I guess, but there's a lot of similarities as well there. So, you've you've done great things, it sure sounds like, in terms of trying to keep the the ship sailing there. But you're not doing it yourself or all yourself. It sounds like, yeah, certainly hands on. But what are some of the team? You mentioned the chef that you had brought in. Are there anyone else?
Oh, I've got an incredible team. Incredible team. Chef Debbie Gold is our executive chef. She's mostly been at Found. My partner, who is also my very dearest friend, who I've worked with for 8 years, there's a lot of decisions being made for us during this time of COVID and a lot that we are making. But Stefan Bosworth, who is kind of my right arm, has decided that he and his partner are moving back to Seattle. So I've worked most closely with Stefan all these years. I did do Stope Island solo, and that was kind of fun, but it just makes me realize how much support there is. And I think it's, for me, another silver lining of COVID is opening my eyes to how much experience and skill and passion people have, the people who I am so fortunate to work with. And by necessity, which was always one of my fundamental principles of giving them the opportunity to do themselves, it's now out of necessity, and it's worked out so great. So our team right now is our amazing event planner, does the events for all the restaurants, and my executive chef, and one of my managers. So, and one Sue. So we've got chef, Sue, GM, and event planner, and myself, and we're kicking it. And hopefully we get then to bring in cooks, and we get to bring in a dishwasher from time to time, or we can, bring in some servers. We did start, one other thing we started, we call it the James Beard pop-up. We're calling it Found Undercover, under the tent. So every Thursdays we're doing a James Beard pop-up at the Barn Steakhouse. And every Thursday, it's actually our second one because we had Thanksgiving in between. We take a max of 18 people a seating, and it's very tiny, spread out, very cool, feels very underground. So that's been nice too, because we get to, bring in a few players, and just the more ideas we have, the more people we can get back to work.
Right. Yeah. Sounds good. Yeah. That, Evanston definitely has a cool vibe to the whole thing, and everything has changed obviously with the pandemic, but I was born, well, not born, I was raised in Oak Park. So I feel, a sense sister of camaraderie city. With Evanston. Yeah, similar, yeah. Sister city, exactly. So, don't find myself that far. It's not that far north, but in that part of town too often. Otherwise, I'd love to check that out. I'm up there occasionally and always looking for something new and different. So I think that, your whole fine food, better cocktails on the awning. It's serving. I've seen where those cocktails will take you here after a few more sips of this.
Drew, finish up your cocktail. Once we're through this whole thing, come on out and we'll have one together.
That sounds good. That sounds thank good. You. Well, thank you very much for your time today.
I really appreciate it.
It's been great to hear what you're having down there. Best of luck to you. Really hats off to everything you're doing, putting your time and your treasure on the line there to help us all get through this. So thank you for your time today. Thanks, and best Drew. Of luck.
Best to you. Be well. Thanks.
Thank you.